RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Yesterday here at RCR, you might remember Bob McCoskrie from New Zealand Family First was here. We were talking about latest data from the government showing more Kiwis than ever are using medicinal cannabis. And Bob had his views on it. And you can check the replay of that interview from yesterday if you want to hear what Bob had to say. Now we are talking the clinical end and the patient or user end of medicinal cannabis. I'm welcoming Dr. Wasim Al-Zaha to the program, and he runs New Zealand's number one cannabis clinic. You're number one, Wasim. Not too bad. Number one, top of the hit parade.
Yes, indeed.
Welcome in. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And Katie Thomas, whose young son is a patient with the clinic. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in. Let's start at the clinical end first and those stats. Wasim, 22,000 just over in 2021 prescriptions for medicinal cannabis. Last year, 108,000, so huge growth. Mostly the older age groups is where the growth is. Are those stats, well, they wouldn't be any surprise to you, obviously.
No, not really. We're right on the edge of that wave in terms of delivering it. So it's no surprise, no, it's a really fast-growing area of medicine. And so it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you think it's been so fast? What sort of awareness has occurred in the last few years particularly, do you think?
It's fast because it was due to come on for a long time. People have been using cannabis for thousands of years, right? And then it was criminalized, you know, in the early 1900s, 1940s, I think in New Zealand, it was the 1950s or early 60s.
Yeah, just after the war, just late in the war, I think, World War II, yeah.
Right, yeah. So, but that hasn't stopped people from using it. So when the law changes and people find out, it's no surprise that there's a big uptake, a big number of people coming through, wanting to do it, you know, under medical supervision in a safe and legal manner. And that's really what's driven the big number of people accessing it. But on the other end, it also takes people like us who are willing to put their heads, you know, above the waters and say, we're happy to talk about this, even though there's stigma, there's judgment, and there's reluctance from people. We're happy to put ourselves out there and have safe conversations around delicate topics like cannabis and how it can help people in their day-to-day life. So the two and two together is what pushed those numbers up significantly. And the bottom line is that it's a really good thing, because all these are people who are being potentially helped, whose lives are being drastically turned around, improved, saved, their lives given back to them where other treatments may have not worked well for them. So it's something to be celebrated, something for us to be proud of as a country, to say, yes, we changed the law, we've had the uptake, and people are benefiting. That was the intention behind the legal changes, and I think we should celebrate it.
Okay, so I turn up at your practice and I feel, well, can I say, look, I think you should be prescribing me some medicinal cannabis. Could I come out and say that? Would that get me anywhere?
Yeah, you could absolutely say that.
Okay.
You can say to us whatever you want, because at the end of the day, for us as doctors, our role is to listen to what the person wants and then give a professional recommendation. Yeah. That's our role.
So you would ask me, what do you think the problem is that it can help you with? And then I would have to have some convincing problems, I would imagine.
Yes and no. You don't need to. When you go to the doctor and you ask for some pain relief because you've got a headache, you don't need to prove to the doctor you've got a headache or cry or prove the pain. You need to communicate the fact that you feel the pain, and that is sufficient, because and that's what is required. So in the consultation, same thing, just because it's cannabis, we don't need people to need to express what's going on for them, and then it's our role as clinicians to determine if medicinal cannabis is an appropriate option and something for them to try.
One of Bob McCoskrie's worries was that people seeking recreational cannabis would take the route of medicinal cannabis, as a way of getting easy, reliable, and probably access to quality product as well. So you're the filter for that, essentially.
In some way, no, I wouldn't agree with that, because we're not here to facilitate people purely as a, we're not a cannabis shop, we're not a cannabis outlet. We're here as professional doctors doing consultations and looking after people's health. So it's our role to provide that as a consulting service. And I think if anybody has any questions or uncertainty about what we do, regardless who it is, they should come and talk to us and actually see what happens day to day. Because the last thing, the last thing I want to hear is that people make judgments or have preconceived opinions about what it is that we do and see and how we help people without being informed. Because I think it's, information, education is important prior to having, you know, judgments that would at the end of the day impact people's lives. So anybody could sit back and say, oh, I think this, or I think you guys are facilitating what, or whatever it is their opinion is. But then you have parents like Katie, whose lives are touched on a daily basis because of the work that we do, and it touches people, and this is people's lives we're dealing with. So it's health, it's a delicate matter, and I think that it's important to put that in perspective, because that's the importance of the work that we do. And at the end of the day, yes, there are people who are using medicinal cannabis through illicit means that come to us, but they come to us not because they're forced to. I mean, cannabis is super easy to get if you really want to access illegal cannabis, right? But they want to do that. They want to be medically supervised. They want to be prescribed. They will be paying more for this. So it's coming out of a genuine desire for these people to be looked after, and we're here to facilitate that and look after them. So we're here to look after people, provide that consultation, that service, as opposed to being an access point or a means to cannabis. That's not why we exist.
Katie Thomas, your young son, a patient of the clinic, as I mentioned at the start. So what has happened with your young son? Can you give us a bit of a story on where you found yourself, where you are now? Because some people would reel at the thought of, you know, a young kid having access to any sort of cannabis. Some would say that's very counterintuitive. So tell us about what you've been through and you know, your son's journey, if you don't mind. Don't want to pry too much, but, you know.
No, I think it's relevant because that was me. So I did not want to give my son medicinal cannabis. Didn't pursue it, wasn't angling for that as a treatment pathway. However, at that point in time, when my son was two and he was first diagnosed, and I had a background in film and TV, a director that I'd worked with once was making a documentary about medicinal cannabis, and he was a huge advocate for it. And we actually fell out quite a bit over the following year, because he kept sending me studies and I thought he was kind of pushing his own personal agenda, and I just wasn't interested. That said, we tried and failed so many medicines, which was heartbreaking. You know, I was hoping for this magic pill that never eventuated. One of our first experiments with an anti-epileptic actually increased his seizures. So they went from 2 to 3 minutes to 5, 7, 15 minutes. And when you're watching your toddler thrashing about with no oxygen, you get quite desperate.
Katie, do you go back to whoever prescribed that and say, hey, you've just given me this stuff, I've given it to my son, and now his fits are longer?
Yes.
And it's your fault.
I did. Right? So I did. And first they're like, no, you just have to keep titrating up and, you know, make sure that you've really tapped out that medicine. And once we kind of got past the 15-minute mark, I was like, this is clearly not working. we need to explore another pathway. And it was while we're in one of those really long stays. So I think we'd been on the ward for maybe 2 or 3 weeks. Nothing was really working.
Gee, okay.
And then Arik showed up. Eddie had a seizure and it was going on. I think it had gone past the 3 minute mark, which, as Waseem would know, once you're trending between that 3 and 5 minute mark, you need to start thinking about an emergency med like midazolam. But we only had sort of like a 50% success rate on that, or fail rate, whichever way you want to look at it. So it might stop the seizure, also might stop him breathing. And Arik had some. I popped a little blob inside his mouth and quelled the seizure in his tracks. So I'd been hoping and praying for a miracle, and there it was.
Wow.
Yeah. It was.
So like a miracle status.
It was just like that. Miracle, absolute miracle. Because I'd already rung the bell a couple of times to have a nurse come and attend. And she was like, yes, he's seizing. And I'm like, and? Like, what are we going to do? And she was like, well, you just wait. And she was like, you can call me again in 5 minutes if you want some midaz. And she left. And I was like, And you just sat there.
What a choice, eh?
Yeah, exactly. So there was absolutely nothing I could have done in that moment. And then when she came back to check up on us, she's like, oh, amazing. Self-resolved, and he's breathing beautifully. You know, none of the like postictal collapse that I'd seen with other drugs. And shortly after that, I was like, okay, this is something to explore. And this is, you know, the path forward for us.
So everybody's life changes right there, sort of.
Yeah. Not to say that it necessarily got easier, but I had a light at the end of the tunnel.
Right.
I there was a thing now. There was something for me to explore, whereas until that, we'd just been scrambling around in the dark. And a lot of those early scrambles, like I'm still dealing with some of the side effects from those early experimentations.
Oh, really? Okay.
Will potentially be with us forever.
So those are adverse effects?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm sorry to hear about that.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. And at the end of the day, I still would have gone down the traditional pathway first. I still would have explored.
Everyone would
have. Pharmaceutical. You know, like I don't think it would have changed that. And I was very fortunate to have a friend who was so persistent and
there you go.
And I just want to say, you know, I had zero support. It's not like everybody was like, yay, medicinal cannabis. My stepdad was a senior detective for the drug squad for more than 10 years here in Auckland.
Okay.
So you can imagine how that went down.
I can.
Yeah. And, you know, my mum is ultra conservative Catholic. She's been working for the Sisters of Mercy on various boards for, you know, the better part of the last 2 decades. Also not thrilled at all. So those early days were very lonely.
But you can't ignore what you see with your own eyes.
And that's the thing. Eventually, everybody came around. My parents could not ignore when they could not disagree with the fact that finally we had something that was working. Not only was it working, but they were seeing more of Edward. Some of the other AEDs or neuroleptics had quite profound impacts on his behavior, communication, everything. And while you're on these sort of, you know, 6 month titration plans, that's a long time not to have a decent interaction with your son or grandson. Whereas, you know, anybody could observe that, okay, we can actually see Edward shine again. And that's enough. It was enough to make them actually go away and do their own research. And I think maybe after a year or two, about the just before the time I went and spoke at Health Select Committee, I remember coming over for tea once and they had these little manila folders on the table and they'd printed out every little bit of research they found on the internet. And they're like, we know we've got some learning to do. Like, just give us a bit of time. But
gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not surprised to, well, really amazing to hear it, but not surprised because, again, you can't deny what you see. And if it's a loved one, like a grandson, and now we're seeing him again, and what's actually going on in the physiology that makes something like that sound like a miracle?
The physiology behind it. So how it works is every person has what's called an endocannabinoid system, which is really interesting. So endo from Latin, from inside, so internal, cannabinoid from cannabis. So we've got an internal, every human being has an internal cannabis system within them. And what's interesting is that the human body creates its own version of cannabis, and these are called endocannabinoids, and the body secretes these hormones all the time to put the body back in balance, to find wherever there's imbalance in the body and to put it back in balance. And cannabis is special as a plant because it's very rich in these cannabinoid compounds. You know, you've got CBD, the non-psychoactive part of cannabis, THC, the psychoactive part, and it actually works on the same receptors that our internal hormonal system works on. And we've got receptors all over the body, from major organs to the brain to everywhere. And that's where it acts. And so it supplements and supports that balancing hormonal system within the body. And that's one of the reasons why we think that the same product, cannabis, in its different forms, can have such a diverse range of effects across different people. For kids, for example, in Katie's situation, it can have anti-epileptic benefits. But for other people, they report it helps them with pain. For other people, they report it helps them with sleep. For other people, they report it helps them with other areas of life. And so it's actually a really unique situation in clinical medicine where one class of products can do such a wide variety of different effects it can have on people. And that's because of this internal cannabis hormonal system that we all carry.
The medical industrial complex won't like that, will they?
The cannabis is divisive, that's for sure. There's a lot of people that it puts their hair up. It's a very divisive topic for sure.
The issue of psychoactive versus non-psychoactive in whatever you're using from the cannabis plant. That's dumb guy on the street talking here from me, but I think you know what I mean. So I think there are some people who are worried that, you know, it being psychoactively used is a bit going a bit too far, that it, you know, that any treatment should not involve that. Yet I can say, because I've used medicinal cannabis before in cancer recovery, that that actually getting high is part of the mindset of dealing with it, and the two are kind of inseparable. I'm wondering what your attitude to that is.
I think they're two different things. Everything has impact when you take it above a certain dose. So for example, if you go to your supermarket, buy some anti-inflammatories, the pack says take one tablet, not suggesting anybody does this. This is a very bad idea, but you take more than that dose. People die from that, right? Because it causes bleeding, it causes kidney issues, and it causes a whole bunch of complications. Same thing with all other medicines. You look at opioids, you know, you take opioids, you take a tramadol or a sevradol, a morphine-based medicine, and it has pain relieving effect, but you take more and it has sedating and negative side effects. And
yeah, I know about that one too. Yeah.
You know about that one, yeah.
Well, that's why I did the other thing, because I couldn't handle that.
Yes. So everything has, you know, has two sides and elements to it. At the end of the day, medicinal cannabis is a really safe and well-tolerated product. You know, people don't die from medicinal cannabis. You can die from other medicines can cause death. Others don't. Medicinal cannabis is a type of medicine that is not lethal. Sure. And having said that, THC, the psychoactive part of cannabis, actually has an important role within the body, within the the endocannabinoid system, and it works alongside the CBD, and we use both fairly regularly to achieve the desired results that we're after.
Yeah, it just made me feel a bit happier. That's all. I mean, when you're in that situation, you're not feeling too happy, right? Katie, how long will you have to keep administering to your son? Is this forever and a day ahead, or how do you think it'll work out?
I don't know. Mm. I really don't. I don't know. At one point, I thought I was tied to it forever. I think I'm a bit more hopeful now. I've seen such enormous progress this year. And things are complicated for us, as you've hinted before. You've had your own experience with opioids, and Edward was on a ventilator during the last lockdown and sedating a refractory child, so a child who doesn't respond to drugs, is very complicated. And we had significant withdrawal issues, and I'm slowly, but carefully and successfully weaning him off all of those medications, which is not insubstantial. And for me, the fallback is CBD, because I know it's safe. Right. There's no scope for abuse, and ultimately he can't die from it. All of these other things that are still lingering in his system, lethal and highly problematic. I definitely don't want that to be an ongoing issue. So if I'm stuck with one medicine for the rest of his natural life, let it be CBD. But I don't know that it will be. I feel like he was an incredibly vulnerable young child. I think he's showing increasing resilience and growth year on year. I mean, that first experiment, you know, he was 3 and now he's 10. You know, that point in time, I didn't know if I was going to get to double digits. Now I'm so confident I'm going to see him into his, you know, many more birthdays fall ahead of us. So I'm not sure, but either way, if we are stuck with one medicine for the rest of our life,
that's it.
Very happy for it to be CBD.
How much does it cost you? It's the other thing.
Thousands of dollars. It is horrendously expensive here in New Zealand. That is the rate limiting factor, I think, for most patients. And for us, I hope that as he ages, that mg per kg price is going to decrease at some point, because I'm quite fortunate he's a very small 10-year-old. I shudder to think what that dose might be by the time he gets to 18 and eating me out of house and home. But like I said, you know, this winter just being, it's the first one where we haven't been in hospital, and I anticipate his health to continue to improve. And I think no small part of that is the CBD, because although we are using it primarily for seizure control, I do think it supplements other areas of deficiency. It's improving his immunity. In the past year, he's been less sick than his younger brother, which is a first. Edward was always the first to catch a flu if somebody sneezed in his general direction. And there's been many more trips to the doctor this year for my 4-year-old. Then
I take it the medicine before that was subsidized, right? You were paying subsidized prices for that.
It's prescribed under the health system.
Not the cannabis, but the whatever you use before that
also all the pharmaceuticals are funded by Pharmac. This is not funded by anybody. We're very, very lucky that we do receive a compassionate discount from the manufacturer, but that's just by their own good grace. It's not a legal requirement. It's not any portion of health funds that come from government. That's just a unique situation for us. Whereas I know there are plenty of patients and whānau that have moved from New Zealand to Australia to take advantage of the compassionate funding for PEDS. And I would love to see that here.
Because what I was heading towards is, and Waseem, get your view on this, is that Bob yesterday, McCoskrey Family First, was talking about having to come up to certain benchmarks of you know, scientific research into efficacy, sort of on the parallel with the pharma drugs. And of course, that's a very high benchmark, very expensive thing to do. And I guess until that happens and there's some official acknowledgement that it works, you're never going to have any subsidy on the national health or through Pharmac, even though it's a freaking miracle. I mean, what's wrong with that picture?
You're correct. Yeah, the standard for funding is quite high. And that's a reflection of the medical model, right? And in terms of how medicine works and how products, because you want to make sure things are safe. The thing with cannabis is that it's different in that it's unlike other medications where, firstly, you're creating a new product that's never been on the market before, and you have to prove that it's safe and it's effective. And so then, of course, you'd want to have high standards before it gets rolled out to people, because we've seen what happens when that's not adhered to, right? When medicines are unsafe.
Yeah, yeah, the seizures go for 15 hours. That's what happens.
In this particular case, yes. But so having said that, it's like, well, how do we, knowing that it's been criminalized for such a long time, how do we facilitate this process where people can have access to it while that evidence and that data is being built up? Because at the end of the day, like I said in the beginning, people have been using this product for thousands of years, and we know it's safe and well tolerated. And yes, we understand that the scientific literature is probably less than some other medicines when you compare it in terms of quantity and in terms of the evidence base and the criteria we put on it. But at the end of the day, there's people's lives, and people are being forced to go and access things illegally in more unsafe ways. How do we bridge that process, and how do we go about it? Because to help people, because it's really easy for anybody to sit back and say, oh, there's not enough evidence, you know, sorry, everybody, please continue to have seizures and be in pain and suffer. I'm not, so I'm all good, but there's not enough evidence, so we'll just wait for the evidence. But this could be like decades. It's going to take time for the evidence to build up. So it's really important that we find like a middle ground where we're enabling people access, we're developing the evidence behind it. And it's a people-led approach. It's a health-led approach. It's you know, we look at the most important outcome is people and their health. How do we facilitate it? And if we can, then the model works behind it. It's not about, you know, going through particular processes just because that's the scientific way of going about it. So a bit of a balance.
All right. It's been a really interesting chat. Waseem, if people listening want to get in touch, connect with someone like you, maybe even you, what's the best way of doing that? Do you have a website that people can go to?
Yes, absolutely. People can log into www.cannabisclinic.co.nz, and they can book online, or they can call us on our number, which is on the website, and we set up the process of the appointment. We arrange for everything to happen. We have that consultation with people. We talk about their health. It's safe. We put aside judgment and stigma. It's a confidential process that people go through. And from there, people can be prescribed, if appropriate, what's going to work best for them. And we take care of the whole process right from beginning to end.
All right. And Katie, thanks for coming on and telling us your experience. Really helpful, I think.
It's my pleasure. And I hope that if there's anybody listening who has toyed with the idea but has been put off for fear of judgment and other reticence around the idea that you might be judged for it, at the end of the day, I still feel like your responsibility is to yourself and your health first and foremost. Mm. And there are knowledgeable clinicians out there who are ready, willing, and able to help you. I cannot stress the importance of having the guidance of a medical professional enough. Don't do it on your own. Don't go seeking it from a tiny house around the corner. Do it safely and correctly, and you'll feel so much relief from having a knowledgeable consultation with a medical professional who is just there to alleviate your symptoms rather than pile on shame and derision.
Yep, nicely said. Okay, thank you, Wasim Al-Zaha and Katie Thomas, for coming on RCR. Really interesting chat. I know we'll get feedback, and if it's relevant, we'll forward it on, because that all helps. Thanks for coming on, and all the best to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for the opportunity.
Cool. Thank you for that. All the best, everyone. That's going to be an interesting one for the audience. I know that.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, you get a bit of business, probably.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So, what were you going to say?
Oh, yep. If there are any patient inquiries who might need some help on the advocacy side, you could point them to the Medicinal Cannabis Aotearoa.
Okay, I might get you. You can just come on and say that right after. If you can imagine Wasim finishing what he said about his website, and you can just come on, and you can da-da-da, and I'll just plug that in. Okay, so whenever you're ready, go for it.
And if there are any patients who might need the assistance of some advocacy or advice before reaching out to a medical professional, please feel free to reach out to us at Medicinal Cannabis Aotearoa NZ. You can find us on our website. If that feels too scary, you can also find me on Instagram. I am Katie Thomas.
Hey, nice. All good. I'll plug that in and it will sound seamless. Usually does anyway. Okay.
Great. Thank you very much.
Have a great weekend, guys. And all the best. Thank you.
See you, guys.
Cheers.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.